Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, good to see you, Carlos.
Thank you for joining the show. So quick intro for people who don't know about what's going on. I'm Carlos, I'm the founder and CEO of Product School, and I'm here with my friend Dan Olsen, who is the best-selling author of the Lean Product Playbook, and he's also a very famous consultant in Silicon Valley and the US for a lot of companies that are trying to revamp product. We'll talk more about that. And it's going to be a casual conversation. We're going to talk all things product and hope this is entertaining for the audience. So why don't we get started, Brad? Dan, how did you get started with all of this tech thing?
Yeah, Carlos, it's great to be on here with you. Always great to talk to you. Well, the story goes way back basically to when my parents, they got me a computer when personal computers came out. You know, I'm a little older, so I'm so glad in hindsight that they did. You know, back in the day, I just kind of played video games on it and I learned to code. But it made me very comfortable with computers. So then I became an electrical engineering major. And then I actually, the first job I did out of the college was doing nuclear submarine design, which was really fun. And it really was kind of, even though I was doing engineering, it really was like very, very technical product management. I didn't realize it until later. I got a master's in industrial engineering while I was doing that. That's where I first learned about lean manufacturing and some great other concepts like the Kano model. And then I realized I want to get more on the business side of things. And so I decided I want to get an MBA. So I went to business school at Stanford. That's what brought me to Silicon Valley. And I've been out here ever since. And it was at business school when I was trying to figure out what to do after graduation, because I'd only done submarine design, which is kind of a rare job, that I learned about product management, this like new career called product management. And it wasn't as anywhere near as popular as hot today. Back then, it wasn't as popular. And it sounded really cool, but I'd never done it. So I asked people, where's the best place to learn? And pretty much everybody at the time said Intuit is the best place to learn. So I was fortunate to get our product manager job at Intuit, and I worked there. And that's kind of how my whole career got started. And then from there, went to startups as a product leader, started speaking at product conferences, got into consulting. So that's pretty much the evolution path of my path. Everybody's got a different path, but that's how mine started.
And that's really cool because, in a way, like I also went to engineering school and nobody taught us anything about public speaking or meeting with other humans.
That,
you know, in management is basically what we have to do every day.
I know. Well, like, you know, my product management joke, the product manager's motto, right? It's like Spider-Man's motto, with great power comes great responsibility. The product manager motto, with great responsibility comes no power. So we have to influence without authority all the time. We have to beg and cajole and bribe people to do what we want because no one reports to us. So yeah, communication and influencing skills are really important. In fact, you know, there's all the hard skills like learning to do agile and learning to, you know, UX design and learning, you know, how to conduct user interviews and prioritization. But then there's the soft side, which is as you grow in your career, I think is even more important to influence at higher and higher levels.
So then you went from engineering school to business school at Stanford, and then you said that Intuit was one of the best product schools at the time. How did you convince someone there to give you a product management job without a previous?
It was a different world back then. So back then, going to a business school was like the main path to get into this small field of product management. So lucky for me, they were coming on campus recruiting to my school. So that was great. And then as far as how I convinced them about me, they really like my technical background. And in fact, in that master's program that I did in industrial engineering, I took a MIS class, management in, you know, information systems class. They don't even know who calls it that anymore, right? But the cool thing about that class was we had to spec out a product and potentially prototype it if we want to. So I got Visual Basic and I prototyped this like portfolio manager. My dad, kind of to get me started with investing, kind of helped me start my IRA right out of college, you know. And so then I loved the kind of geek quant in me, loved kind of like what happened to my mutual prices today. I had the spreadsheet that I was updating. So I decided to, like, you know, for this MIS class, for the project, create like a portfolio tracker. And so I learned Visual Basic, which I'm really glad I did because it's kind of like JavaScript, and prototyped it. So then when I came to talk to the Intuit people, I kind of told them all about that. They could tell I was a product geek at heart and had a good tech chops, you know, and they figured, I think with the tech background and the MBA, it would be a good combo.
So since you start working at Intuit, yeah, they probably give you some of their problems or products that you have to work on. But at some point, you also start like literally spreading the scope. And your book is extremely popular, and you cover so many different industries. Now you work as a consultant. So how do you go about picking those challenges or problems that you really want to solve?
Yeah. Well, luckily, I mean, the biggest thing I'm excited about is training. Same thing the product school is doing, right? Training product people, right? When I went to Stanford Business School, there wasn't even a product management class or elective, right? And you know, if you're lucky, there might be one or two electives at your business school. Out of 2 years, you get one or two electives. And we used to say you can't get a degree in product management. Turns out Carnegie Mellon actually has a degree now, so we can kind of say it's for a certain number of people that go to Pittsburgh every year. I guess it's online now too. But anyway, the bottom line is there's not like a really good training curriculum that before product school existed. For product managers, right? It's just you kind of learned it on the job. You kind of picked it up. So you got people coming in from design, people coming in from analytics, people coming in from all these different paths, usually getting an internal transfer within a company, right? So for me, training is my top goal. I love training and sharing best practices. I was fortunate to work it into it. So that's why I wrote the book. That's why I speak. That's also why I run the Lean Product Meetup, you know, where I bring in top speakers every month. I've been doing that for 6.5 years. So that's the training part of it. As far as I also in the consulting part, usually people come to me with interesting problems, and it's a great thing where it's a self-selection where usually a lot of my clients are people that they've had a certain amount of success and so they're happy about that, but they want to take their product and business to the next level. And they realize that they've kind of hit some constraints because they don't have the product skills in-house that they need, and they'll hire me to help them out. So that's a lot of fun. I really love working with those kind of companies. A lot of times those are post-series A companies. Like I worked with Box back in 2007. So they obviously had some success going, but they were nowhere near the unicorn that they became. Medallia, One Medical Group, those are two other unicorns that I also helped. I love working with really talented teams that just need help taking their product and business to the next level by applying some of the techniques that and frameworks that I've developed in the book.
One of the things I love about not just the book, but you know, my interactions with you is how you are able to break down strategy, because sometimes we talk about product, it's a very broad topic. And yeah, it sounds great, but like, how do you actually get something done? And I think that, especially your book, when I was learning product, one of my references was actually your book. And I remember I called, email you, and you replied. I was like, oh my God, he replied to my email. And not only that, we spoke and we had dinner, and I was like, he's a human, and he's able to connect with people and really explain complicated concepts in a very simple way and help no matter where you are in the process. So that's something that I always remember.
Yeah, no, I love bringing, you know, product management can be a very lonely job. You know, a lot of startups have one PM, or even if you have a PM team, it's not like you collaborate, you divide up the product and everybody, you know, is a lone wolf for their area. So it's great when we get product people together to compare notes. Whenever you get, you know, more than five product managers together, I like to say PM therapy ensues no matter what. It's like, can you believe this developer told me this, or my CEO told me, you know, and you realize you're not crazy, you know? I really love the community. And, you know, like I said, when I was coming up, there wasn't a lot of resources. So I like kind of like solving the problem that I had for people today, you know? And it's always, I love talking with you and what you guys are doing to advance the product community. Is awesome. So yeah.
Something that I've seen also in the product training space, especially these days, is that when we started, and this is 6 years ago, and you also started earlier, engineering or having a technical background was really, really important. Now there's obviously a weight in that, but that's not the only skill that some of the companies
have. Right. So yes.
What's your take on some other skills that are relevant for people thinking about building product?
Yeah. And I, you know, it kind of, you know, on the one hand, I get it that, you know, obviously being technical helps. I think it's too often people just kind of say, oh, if you don't have a technical background, we're not even going to talk to you. So I do think I've seen plenty of PMs that don't have like a CS degree be successful, right? But it can't help, right? What you want to do is know what's possible with the technology. You want to be smart in your interactions with engineering. not be some new PM and ask them to build something that's going to take like a year to build, right? You want to avoid that. So it's really more of a credibility thing. The other skills, I mean, these days, well, the basic skills, I would say, like, one is kind of like being clear on objectives. Kind of, you mentioned strategy briefly, right? It's really easy to fall into like a junior PM role and just be executing every 2 weeks in your sprints, but not understand why you're doing the things that you're doing, right? And so if you're getting fed, like, I think of like a baby bird, a mama bird feeding a baby bird. If you're just like a junior PM getting fed, you know, your user stories and you're just executing it, that's fine. But at some point you need to be like, why are we doing this? How do we connect the dots to what's going on overall? So I think actually one of the most important questions for PMs to ask and think about is why? Like, why are we doing this, right? Why is this the right target customer? Why is this the right item on the roadmap? You know, why is this the right way to build this feature? And I think the other thing I see is junior PMs assume someone else higher up in the food chain knows why. And a lot of times, you know, I catch them in their career, mid-career, and they realize, oh my gosh, the emperor has no clue. Like, nobody knows why. We're all running around just building features because some VP said we got to build this feature, but even they don't know how it's tied back to any objective, right? So it's kind of funny. You start to realize, oh my gosh, I'm the one that needs to provide why. Like, it's my job to figure out why. What should we be doing and why? So that's like it's like an aha moment, I think, as PMs get through their career. They realize, wow, like, we're the ones who figure out why at some point in our career. So that's really important. And then that naturally leads into prioritization, right? You know, there's always way more ideas of what could be built. And you need to come up with some way to rationalize why this one's more important than this one, right? So you need to think back to your objectives. You need to think about ROI, what's the scope going to be. So I think those two things, like getting clear on the overall objectives and why, and prioritizing, are two key skills for any product manager at all that, you know, to succeed.
I agree. And something that I've seen a lot with people who get their first PM job is that, of course, they learn that they have to think strategically. They also have to prioritize. They need to ask questions. But at the same time, you are the new person in the team, right? So it can be intimidating sometimes, especially if you don't have the official authority in terms of the title. So what do you think are some best practices for new PMs to kind of get up to speed during the first month?
Yeah, I totally agree. You don't want to come in hot and be like, hey, we're doing it all wrong. This is it. You're doing story points wrong. Here's how you need to do it. I just finished my certification. Let me, you definitely don't want to do that. So the stuff I was talking about is like more mid-career. You start to realize, hey, I'm a senior PM. I kind of see that what's going on. As a new PM, you're exactly right. I mean, the number one thing I think is you want to listen a lot. You just want to be a sponge. Just soak up everything, because, you know, you may have a range of PM training, but you don't necessarily have the experience yet. And no matter what, you know, books are great. You know, I like my book. Blogs are great. Videos are great. Classes are great. But until you actually get in the trenches and are practicing and get your hands dirty with product management, you won't, you know, that's when you really start learning it to the next level. So the other thing is you want to meet with everybody, because any new employee, this is true, your schedule starts out empty pretty much. And like, you can say, I'm the new kid on the block. Hey, can I get coffee with you? Can I just meet with you? Can I just understand, you know, what you do and how it fits in? Everyone will give you that benefit of the doubt when you're new and just be like, yeah, I'll meet with a new kid, whatever, right? As soon as you get busy and stuff and everything, then like, your calendar is going to get full. They're going to be like, okay, you're not the new kid on the block anymore. So it's really important, back to what we were saying, nobody reports to us. We're going to have to beg, borrow, and steal to get things done. So let's build all those relationships early on. The other thing is also to know who to go in the organization, where to go for certain questions, because things are going to pop up and you're going to be like, oh, I don't know anybody in marketing. And it's going to be like a cold call to marketing instead of, oh yeah, I had coffee with that one person from marketing, let me go follow up with them. So take the time to just meet with as many people as you can that you're going to be working with or in your extended cross-functional stakeholder group. Listen first. The other thing I think is be a team player, right? Is be a team player first. Let people know you're a team player, that you're not going to come in all like, you know, arrogant and say, here's what we need to be doing. Here's how we should be doing it. And even new CEOs do this, honestly. Good CEOs, when they come into a new company, they listen first. They don't just come in and say, oh, we got to do it this way. Because the reality is you need to tailor techniques to the situation, right? When I went from Intuit to my first startup as a product leader, I couldn't just take the exact same process we did Intuit and, you know, have a hammer and do it the same way at the startup. I had to adapt it. So same thing. So listen first. And then as you start to observe opportunities to make improvements, then you can start to say, hey guys, what do you think about trying it this way? There's ways to do that. You obviously need to get up to speed on the domain. You know, there's always like your product management functional skills that you need to have, which in my opinion are most important. And then there's a domain. Okay, I'm working in legal software. I got to learn about legal software. Or I'm working in, you know, bug tracking software. I need to learn about bug tracking, what's important, right? So you need to get up to speed on the domain. And then I think the biggest thing in the back of your mind, the meta goal is you want to establish your credibility. You want to establish your credibility. You are the new kid on the block. Everyone's looking at you and judging you. And so I hate to say it this way, you don't want to be too risk averse, but you want to avoid making any like faux pas. Don't say, oh, we've got to do this. I, you know, and then it turns out that you were completely wrong. Then you just shot your credibility in the foot, right? So you're eventually going to have to make recommendations and calls. I'm not saying don't just sit on the fence and waffle, but just avoid, just make sure, you know what you're talking about when you do pick that first battle to fight. And then demonstrate your knowledge and demonstrate how you can add value. You know, if there's things you see slipping through the cracks, that's a great, you know, I think about baseball and like, you know, someone kind of catching the ball when it goes between the other people, you run and get the ball so it doesn't slip through the cracks. Do that. And then people will be like, wow, that new PM, he's stepping up and adding value. He or she is stepping up and adding value. And then, you know, that's how you kind of earn credibility.
And I'm glad you're bringing awareness around that, because from the outside, sometimes it looks like being a PM is having these great ideas, right? And you sit on the table and you tell people what to do, but it's not that sexy and you have to do whatever it takes to get things done and add value, as you said.
Yeah. It's not, you're the CEO of your product, Carlos. If you go in there like, I'm the CEO of the product, guys, you gotta listen to me. That's not gonna go too well, right? So that metaphor is okay. Some people hate that metaphor. Some people love that metaphor. It's an okay metaphor. If you take it too far and take it literally, that's not the case. What they mean is you need to be thinking full scope about the product. And yeah, I think it's what you said is important, definitely.
So another trend that I saw during these years is that before, at least when I started, like not everyone knew what product management was. So they would be asking me, what is the difference between project management and product? And now I think market timing, everything is happening. Obviously, everything is moving digital. So there's much more awareness around product. And this is not just a high tech industry thing or Silicon Valley thing. Like those industries and any company is using products, internal or external, and every company needs some sort of better collaboration. So as a PM, and by the way, it's another thing is like product. When we say product, it seems like it's just PM. Like there's so many other people working in your product team. And how do you, it can be overwhelming. We get a lot of people who are like, hey, you know, yes, I started engineering. Yes, I went to business school, but you know, I get my job. And in reality, we're working on things that have nothing to do with any of the stuff that I learned. And now we need to learn design, data, whatever it is. So as a generalist, where do you draw that boundary between knowing enough about certain things to be dangerous, but also not being too micromanaging and kind of losing focus of the entire picture?
The reality is, you know, in some of my other talks, I talk about like the set of skills it takes to really deliver a great product. To your point, it's not just PM. Like you need PM, you need like interaction designers, you need visual designers, you need front end coders, you need back end coders. Like it's a lot of skills, right? And maybe it's a lot of skills. So you know, there's a saying, nature abhors a vacuum. Like good PMs abhor a vacuum. If there's some skill gap, like QA is, you know, it's not sexy to have QA teams anymore, right? So that, like, guess who gets to do the QA or the UAT? It falls on the PM shoulders. So the good PMs will sense where the gaps are and fill the gaps. Now that can end up leading to a long job description and them working, you know, tirelessly and around the clock and things like that. So you want to try to, in the long run, figure out how you can divest those things, right? But in the short run, you're going to do it. And the strategy I like to do, back to what you're saying, is like, where's the biggest need and what's the biggest ROI? And, you know, like, and I also think PM should embrace learning a fair bit about the adjacent functions, right? So like, we talked about dev, like, you know, like, and I see a lot of PMs, like, I'm going to go take a Java class. Like, you're not going to be coding Java. That's not what's helpful. What's helpful to know, is this a front end change or a back end change? Does this require a database change? You know, those kind of things. That's like, and what's the scope? Like, so it's kind of funny because there's not really, I've thought about actually doing something just on that, like as opposed to like learning stuff, right? Same thing in UX design. Like you really want to learn about UX design, right? But the way I figure out how much to get involved is how strong that person is on the team. If I have a rock star designer on my team, then I'm going to say, great, I'm going to give them much more rope and let them do their thing. And I'll step back and fill a bigger hole that exists on the team, right? If conversely, say we don't have a designer on the team, then I'm going to have to step up and maybe do the wireframes and you know, things like that, right? So it just depends on your relative to your team. And I think back to the micromanaging thing, you know, again, yeah, people don't report to you, and you need to be careful on how much you're directing versus what your credibility is. Like, what's your currency? How much currency have you earned to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to make a big deal out of this thing. I'm going to follow my sword for this thing, right? And I remember one time I went into it that happened, and I was like, I there was a very specific thing I found, and I kind of used the gravitas and credibility I'd used at that point to kind of pick that as my battle. And that was like the one thing that I did, you know, that quarter or whatever that I thought would make a big difference. So, you know, the other thing is to let people try first. You know, you can be a little too risk averse and go, you know, maybe the designer can handle those wireframes, but maybe they can't. I'll just do the wireframes just to be safe. Like, you got to give people a shot first. So let them try and then see how they do. And if they fail, then you can say, okay, we have an issue here, and you can try to do it. But, you know, it's tough because I think PMs should learn about the adjacent skills as much as they can. You should learn a little bit about marketing. You should learn a little bit about finance, a little bit about UX, a little bit about dev, a little bit about analytics. You know, it doesn't mean you're an expert in all those things. And sometimes people hear that and they go, you know, man, Dan, you're talking about like Superman or Superwoman PM. Who can know all those things, right? But you're really just trying to make sure you're kind of like knowledgeable enough to have meaningful conversations with those cross-functional partners. And you can ask smart questions so that you can add value and make sure, again, your job, the other metaphor people use is like you're an orchestra conductor, right? That's where this comes in, is like, okay, the UX person knows their world, the dev person knows their world, you know, the analytics person knows their world. Who's making sure all those worlds are united and make sense and that they're rowing in the same direction in concert? Like, that's the PM job. So that's why it's helpful to know a lot of that stuff, not for you to go do their job for them, you know, although again, you can pinch it and fill in if you're in a situation where there's a hole.
I'm glad we're having this conversation because this is not for everyone. And the more information you have up front, the better decisions you can make for your life. And personally, and I guess that's your case too, we love like being more of a generalist and having an influence over multiple things so you can kind of put all the pieces together. But there are people who just prefer to be the best at one particular thing and become a specialist. And that's fine as well. I think when I was in engineering, I was kind of being conducted in one specific direction, and I wish I had at least more options to know that you can leverage your technical background in other ways. But I also guess that when you start working in product, we almost assume that everyone is doing the same. Okay, you work as an entry-level PM, and then what, right? Like, even in product, you can also become a product specialist. We call the product lead, principal PM. Like, you still want to be in the weeds, like literally dealing with designers, engineers. And there are other people who maybe want to take more of a people management approach, right? So can you talk a little bit more about those different career
paths? Yeah, definitely. And basically it's funny because, as you said, when you start in your PM career, you're an individual contributor. You're IC, 100% IC. And then as you move up, you might informally coach, depending on the size of your PM team. You might say informally coach some other PM, which means what? They come and hit you up for questions and say, hey, Dan, you know, what PRD template should I use? And how I got this question or issue, what should I do? Right? You'd be a coach kind of, right? And it's not quite a formal manager. And usually, you know, PMs, we don't have a lot of management layers. There aren't like 20-to-1 fan out ratios. It's kind of like Jedi. You got like one or two Padawans at max, right? And that's it. And that's, you know, And when you go from being an individual contributor to the first time you're a people manager, that can be a very difficult transition for a lot of people. And same thing in the dev world. It's like, say, imagine you're a rockstar developer. You're coding away, you're a 10X program, you're coding away. And they go, Dan, you're doing such a good job. We're going to make you a manager. And now it's like you went from doing 100% geeking out coding, doing brilliant stuff, to now I've got to do one-on-ones with all these people. I only get to code maybe 10% of the time, you know, and then people realize, you know, be careful what you wish for because your job just totally changed. And then so there is in programming and in PM, this individual contributor track where you keep getting more and more senior experience, like you said, going up to principal path, and there's a management path. Back on the PM side, it can be a rough thing because I think a lot of successful PMs are like, hey, if you want it done right, do it yourself. They learn to minimize risk. They do a lot of things themselves on their plate, right? And as I said, we want to try to delegate when we can, but we end up being very self-sufficient. Good PMs become very self-sufficient. And so then when they become managers, they're used to that self-sufficiency habit and just doing things themselves. And so they might find themselves, for example, writing user stories and backlogs for someone on their team where they need to delegate that, right? You're never going to get out of that trap. So, you know, you got to basically figure it out. Actually, I was just working with a client yesterday and the PM got promoted to the lead and they hired a junior PM. So the way they're doing it is the experienced PM is handling the more complex, larger scope products. And the more junior PM is handling, you know, the less complex, less scope products. So that's a way to do it. And then they can manage and coach. But it's really, the other thing is just like who taught you PM skills, who taught you people management skills? You know, in corporate America, people get put in manager jobs all the time without any preparation or training. And it is very different. It is very different where, in a sense, that person's your product and you want to coach them. You know, you have one-on-ones and we're all so busy executing who has time for one-on-ones, who has time for growth and development discussions, but they're really important. And that was another fortunate thing of working at Intuit is aside from learning, you know, amazing product management and marketing fundamentals and market research fundamentals, they just had good people management and general managers there, right? We had goals, we had objectives, we had growth and development discussions, you know, and it was all tied together and related with one-on-one. So part of it is if you've never seen good people management in action, it can be hard to emulate. But it's an important skill to pick up and you can just measure it basically by, with your employee status. Just like you have NPS for a product, you can have, they call it EPS, ENPS, employee net promoter score, right? How happy is your employee, you know, and as a manager now, your main job is to provide the whys for them, right? The next level up whys, why should we be doing this to, if there are obstacles or challenges in their way to help them get past those obstacles and challenges basically, right? Be a thought partner for them. So.
We're actually seeing a lot of product people become CEOs, mm-hmm. and also a lot of founders/CEOs work as product managers at larger organizations. So I see a lot of overlap there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because you've got to, like you said, it's a generalist role where you need to know a lot of things. So definitely.
Well, Dan, it's been great to have you on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with?
No, just it's been great talking with you guys. Like I said, my passion is training. Just in case anyone's interested, I do private workshops. I do tons of private workshops for companies. With COVID now, my public workshops are online. So if you go to my website, dan-olson.com, I just, it's funny, I did one, my first online one a little bit ago and people are like, we want it to be longer. So it's like 4 half days, you know, everybody gets Zoom fatigue. So instead we don't do whole days. Like, you know, when I do the workshops in person, it's like 2 or 3 days, you know, so we chop it up. But anyway, I've got like a 4 day, 3 hours a day workshop coming up in November that I'm excited about. If you want to learn about that and you can check out my talks and other stuff at dan-olson.com. But no, it's really good talking to you, Carlos. I'm excited. You guys got your big event, ProductCon, coming up.
And thank you for being such a big contributor of the community. You said yes the very, very beginning, and you've been continuously supporting us, giving back, and it's been an amazing journey. So thank you for all of that.
Thanks, Carlos. Well, it was a good yes. Look at this. Look what all the amazing things you and Product School have accomplished for the product community. So I'm glad, and it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Bye. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.